The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Lots of great... I'm glad Kay and Kilkenny, she watched Succession last night, so did I. The gift that keeps on giving. What a season finale. Can't wait for season three. If you watched it, you'll know it was just a humdinger. Travel says, Neavitt from Donegal to Dublin for a day trip specifically to visit 14 Henrietta Street last year. It did not disappoint. Utterly fascinating. And more in it. You have me crying, says Barbara in Meath, after hearing Dublin in the Rare Old Times, played by Sinead there on the piano, and thinking of Brendan Grace. A fab but sad programme last night. Well done to RTE on capturing great moments. Well, as we're here on Henrietta Street in the shadows of the King's Inns, and not far, excuse me, from the forecourt and all things legal, we're joined by one former solicitor and retired judge, Gillian Hussey. Good morning, Gillian. It's lovely to see you again.
Good morning, Ryan.
Do you have memories of Henrietta Street and passing up and down?
Well, I would actually possibly need binoculars. I'm just looking around the room here,
yes.
And I see I'm by far the oldest person here, and most of the people who lived on the street who are here today weren't born when I used to go up and down this street.
Okay, but you do recall it then, in that sense.
I do recall it. Yeah. I recall it as coming from a very ordinary middle-class family, convent educated.
In Wexford?
Well, I was born in Wexford, but I lived most of my life in Dublin.
Okay.
But I'm bi-national. when it suits.
When it suits, I get
it. Yes, of course. But I do remember coming up and down here. I only remember coming up here when the sun was shining, oddly enough. I don't ask me why.
Here it is
doing
again today.
Doing it again today.
Yeah, it's a habit.
But I remember being terrified because there were... I should say, I'm an only child. So you have to put this in context.
Go ahead.
I would come up here and I would pass up on my, particularly my right hand side, and I'd see a load full of kids on the front steps. Now, I don't know whether they were going to school or whether they weren't, or whether it was holiday time or what. This is my memory of these kids. And you never knew whether they were going to run after you or do something that you weren't used to. I had never seen anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lovely to come back and see what has happened to the street and what's happened to the people.
Yes, and they've done a lovely job in the house, haven't they?
It's remarkable.
It's fascinating. Mm. You say you're born in Wexford, and then you studied law in UCD, in Earlsford Terrace as it was then, and you became a solicitor. But you must have been one of the first female judges, were you?
I was the fifth, I think.
The fifth in the country. Were you in the district court?
I was in the district court.
Were you surprised to be made a judge, or...?
Well, it all happened by chance.
Yeah.
I met a solicitor on the street one day, and he said, they're looking for a woman to be a district judge.
Yes.
Why don't you apply? Now, I had done civil litigation, always, after I qualified. But I thought... How could I do that?
Yes.
But anyhow, I went home and I mentioned it to my about-to-be teenage children. And they said, why don't you go for it?
Good.
So I had to get a young solicitor to do my CV, because I didn't know what a CV was in those days.
Yeah, what year are we talking, roughly speaking?
We're talking about 1984.
In 1984.
And a bit like a documentary that was on RTE1 there some time ago.
Yes.
I got a phone call from a member of the government telling me that I was about to be appointed, and there were two men going to be appointed with me.
Yes.
But that the government was withholding this appointment until they made certain that I wasn't going to sue my former husband.
Really? Because they didn't want the...
They didn't want egg on their face.
They didn't want a to-do and egg on the face. Isn't that amazing?
I got very angry inside, and I thought, well, stuff it. And then I thought, hang on a moment. Who's going to be the loser? I am.
Yes.
And then I laughed and I said, well, I told the person at the other end of the phone, well, actually, that was done 10 or 12 years ago.
Yeah, came over.
Absolutely.
What's it like when you, if you want to take a sip, though, that you
can
buy
one.
What's it like when when you have the authority and responsibility as a judge to incarcerate somebody or set them free? I often, when I watch a movie, I often wonder, that's an enormous a burden almost, but it's your job.
It's a job, and you have to be, you just have to go for it, so to speak. There's nobody that doesn't make mistakes, but I have no apology to make for some of the people I put in prison. But prison to me is a last resort. If you can get little Johnny, as I call the accused people, and you can give that person a better life through maybe the probation service or some projects or whatever, we're all winners. The taxpayer is a winner.
Yeah.
Because I don't know whether the taxpayers realise the cost that they are paying to have little Johnny incarcerated for whatever length of time he would be incarcerated, or she would be. And really, isn't it much better to have somebody get a life together?
And how do you feel about nature versus nurture? Or do you think some people are born bad, or do you think they become bad?
I don't know. The jury is still out.
A good answer from you. Would you sway more one way than the other?
I would certainly sway in trying.
Yes.
And if at first you don't succeed, well, try again. And eventually you might say to yourself, you know, I'm sorry, but it's not working, so in you go.
When somebody like Michael Bambrick comes up before you, what do you remember of him and looking at him?
I remember his eyes. He had the strangest eyes I ever saw. Frightening. I don't know whether he had any sort of disability or what. But then when you think of what he did, I really don't. I only put him through the court and read the book of evidence, and I didn't have to deal with him for very long, but certainly it's a memory I always have.
It stays with you. So you look in the whites of people's eyes then when you're sentencing or
yes.
dealing with them. And can you read people? Do you believe you're reading people when you're looking at them?
I had one case shortly before I retired, and I couldn't tell you a thing about the victim who was sitting in the witness box, but I could tell you about the accused. And it was actually the first time that Father Tony Walsh, the singing priest, was convicted of sexual assault or whatever it was. And it was purely by watching him in the dock and his movements in the dock.
That
made me convict him.
What was he doing?
He had assaulted a young boy.
Yes.
After the young boy's grandfather's funeral in a pub up in Ballyfermot.
But what was he doing in the dock that was so...
His whole body language was telling me he was actually enjoying this young boy telling his story. I could never tell you a thing about that young boy, but I can tell you everything. And ironically, I laughed sometime after I retired. I was doing the commission for the sexual abuse by the clergy. Mm-hmm. I was chairing it, and I was in the solicitor's office, and this solicitor mentioned Tony Walsh. And I said, you know, I dealt with him. He said, yes, he said. And I have to say this to my credit. I love saying it, but it's the only time I ever heard it. He said, it was an inspired decision. And yeah. I looked at him and said, well, how do you know?
Yeah.
And he said, I was in the court. Which, of course, thinking back, I should have realised he was. And I said to him, where were you? He said, I was at the back of the court. I said, that's the difference. I said,
yeah.
I saw what was going on in the dock. You didn't.
Brendan Smith.
I was on duty the night he was brought down.
He was one of the most gruesome.
Revolting man.
A revolting man.
Repulsive.
Explain that to me if you could. I mean, I can hazard a guess why,
He sat there. I don't know. He sat there as if he slumped down. He had no interest in being there. He was a man who definitely, he had a mind of his own. And I would say he hadn't an ounce of remorse for what he was doing.
Remarkable, isn't it?
And I believe going up and down in the prison van, if he saw young boys, he was quite disgusting.
It's repulsive, isn't it, thinking about people like that?
It's awful.
But you know something? We talked briefly before the show, and people like Richie Sadler and Sophia and even Chanel Miller over in America, who I spoke to yesterday, all young people in Ireland today talking freely about crimes like that in a way that possibly mightn't have been possible 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
But 20.
Pretty brave. And I don't think people, victims, like that word, by the way, so I'm reluctant to use it, but it is breathtaking that they are willing to come before us all and say, this happened. It's healthy, probably a better word.
It's healthy. And, you know, it's the sexual abuse crimes, they have been there long before I was around, and even as when I look now and I see the mother and baby things and so on, how many years before they actually came to the surface? They were there when I was a kid. Nobody ever knew about them, and nobody talked about them. And I mean, if I had gone home and told my parents that I had been abused, they wouldn't have believed me. Nobody would have believed you in those days. But it's wonderful to see people having the guts, and it is guts.
You retired, and I got the sense, Gillian, that you might have been somewhat disillusioned. I mean, you said something along the lines of that you got fed up.
I did.
What were you fed up
with? I loved my job.
Did you?
I did. I loved my job. I could still feel like doing it.
Yes.
But first of all, my children were grown up. I had no dependents. I could not claim any dependents for tax purposes. Silly, but I fed up in tax. Sure. And the second was, I'd been 17 years on the criminal side. And in that 17 years, I saw no improvement coming from the government in the criminal justice system. I'm now 17 years retired.
Yes.
And I'm still as sad as I was.
That's disappointing.
Very.
It's disappointing. But I love what you do with Tig Lynn and our friend Aubrey.
Aubrey,
and,
yes.
And others.
Indeed. They're a wonderful, wonderful...
A wonderful bunch of people who take... I think they do something with the Johnny that you're talking about and friends, female and male, who feel they have no hope, and they bring them somewhere with a torch.
They do. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
And they stick at it.
They do. It's the resilience.
And everybody, it's not a one-size-fits-all.
That's for sure. That's for sure. It's a great,
wonderful,
it's a great place to support if people are in a position to do that. Gillian, thanks for coming to see us today.
Thank you indeed for having me.
Yeah, I always enjoy talking to you.
I must say, it's a privilege to be part of this.
Oh, it's a privilege to have you as part of it.
It's a wonderful, wonderful day for Henrietta Street.
Okay, well, thanks for saying so, and thanks for being here today. Really good to talk to you. Retired Judge Gillian Hussey joining us around the table here in 14 Henrietta Street at 8 minutes to 10. We've more to come. Loads of texts in on the different things we've been talking about today, 51551, and some guests are standing by to say hello. We'll get to them after this break.